Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and now Boston, Massachusetts. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call them today, 633-3700, and ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants, and that's our guarantee to you. Also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk, zero cost, zero risk, to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And if you read the morning newspaper this morning, you'd see that the market inventories are very tight. And if you do are in the market and you're looking for a home and you find the one you want, oftentimes you're going to be competing with other offers. The strongest offer, obviously, is all cash. Not that many people have all cash to buy a home today. But the equivalent of that is a mortgage commitment. And that's what we provide for you, the pre-purchase commitment, no cost, no risk to you. Call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700, and look for personalized, customized, knock your socks off service. And check out that low rate guarantee. Don't forget about the first ever 24/7 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, and even out to Arizona and also Boston, Massachusetts. The local number here is 716-631-4800. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about. No matter whose listing it is, doesn't have to be ours. The hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description. You'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property. All that fast, all automatic. Fastest way to find out about anything relative to any particular listing, any listing, not necessarily ours, whether it's ours or any other broker's. So check that out today, the Hunt Hotline. Hunt Real Estate is the official real estate and relocation provider for our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans. Go Sabres. Game today, Nashville, I believe. It's important to keep that streak alive. We are broadcast live here at WBEN 930 AM. And for those of you who would like to participate in today's show, if you have any questions or comments about any aspect of real estate, call us in the studio here today at 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance. Star 930 if you're mobile and 30930 if you want to text us. All free, so join us here on the air. We have a very special show for you today. There's a lot going on in town as we talk about regularly. But one of the most important things is what is part of our landscape, and that is the Olmsted Parks. And here to help us understand more about the Olmsted Parks is the Executive Director of the Buffalo Olmsted Parks Conservancy, Stephanie Crockett. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning, Peter. Thank you.
It's good to have you back.
It's wonderful to be back.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, I ask you to do this every time, but it's been a while since you've been on. So how did Olmsted get to town, and why did he pick Buffalo, and what's the scope of the system today?
Well, I think Buffalo chose him. He had made such a big splash in Central Park that the leadership here wanted to bring him to town to create our Central Park. But when he got here, he found that the land was rich in opportunity and decided on three sites, which is Front Park, Delaware Park, and MLK Park today. And he created the first park and parkway system. So all of the parks were connected by the parkways, which I think you even live on one now, Peter.
I do, yeah.
And they're just
a place to live.
It is. It was the nation's first urban park system ever designed, and it went on to grow to be six parks, seven parkways, and eight traffic circles.
Six parks, seven parkways, and
eight traffic circles. Wow. And the conservancy, even though the acreage is quite big when you consider all the streets that are part of the system, the conservancy takes care of 850 acres of green space.
How big is the total?
We estimate it's probably around 1,100 or 1,200 acres when you consider, like Richmond Parkway or Porter Avenue.
So, you know, we take it for granted, like lots of things around here, you know, drive around, see these beautiful streets and beautiful parkways and beautiful parks. But it seems to me, as I look at it every day, that it's an enormous task. So where do you start? And because I know when you started, let's talk about the Conservancy itself for a second. When you started, it wasn't so pretty.
No.
And lots of parks around this country were considered crime zones.
Absolutely. When the Conservancy started, it was just a friends group, and that was in 1978. And the reason they galvanized was that's when the Science Magnet School was going in next to the Science Museum in MLK Junior Park, which is actually kind of appropriate that we've got MLK weekend this weekend and we're talking about this. But the school was going to be put in on top of what was existing then as about a 5-acre rose garden. Kind of similar to the one that you would find in Delaware Park today.
Mm-hmm.
So the group was a little bit upset because they didn't want our beautiful green space to be just considered developable land.
Mm-hmm.
And so they put up a fight not to have the school put in the park. It failed. The school is there. But it did bring everybody together and start to realize, yeah, if we don't protect this now, we could see all of our parks just be consumed by buildings, asphalt, and whatever. And we could never replace today what mm-hmm. we have. And in going to many conferences around the United States, everyone is talking about connectivity. And they're like, if we build new parks, we need those parks to connect. And I'm sitting in there in the audiences thinking, we have that mm-hmm. right in Buffalo. And we might be taking it a little for granted.
Is the Science Museum inside the park system?
The Science Museum is. So we've got almost every major cultural institution with a footprint in and on the Olmsted Parks.
Was that part of the design or was that something that was an afterthought?
It was an afterthought. Olmsted's only institution that he actually planned for was the Botanical Gardens in South Park. Everything else was put in after he left town, which was probably about 1896.
Now, after he left town, the Pan American Exposition took place.
1901.
And that took up some of the land, too.
So, it did.
So what happened there? How did they do that? Were there no kind of regulatory bodies that were going to come in and say no to everything like they do now?
No. They looked at Delaware Park in particular, where the Pan Am Expo was, as just really popular space and really good space. And so that's why you saw the 1901, the History Museum went in. The Albright Knox came in 1904. So you saw those areas start to develop just because of the expo. It was just a prime location. And Olmsted had done such a great job, over the past 30 years of making that space really important as a site.
So the contemporary news is that there's going to be a huge development, right, technically inside the park system with the Albright Knox.
Yes.
How did you interact with the board and the administration there to put your stamp of approval on all that? Because obviously the whole thing's going to change quite considerably.
It is. So when the Conservancy formed as a nonprofit, we've also developed over the years just some design guidelines that if anyone's going to build in or near around the Olmsted Parks, we follow these design guidelines. And so we just started meeting with the Albright Knox. And I want to say that organization has been very transparent, very inclusive, very good to the neighbors around it. And it's been actually wonderful to have them acknowledging the value of the Olmsted landscape that they're sitting in. And so our major concern was really the viewshed and the fact that they were looking at, building on their footprint, which is historic ground. But when you look at the site that they chose, which I thought was actually very smart, that's the most disturbed part of the park. And so mm-hmm. they're actually building on a place that's basically already been ruined. So mm-hmm. we gave them a thumbs up that was a pretty good location. And the fact that they are burying their parking, which is just truly expensive, but they're giving back green space, which was just another, big shot in the arm of way to go, Albright Knox. So you're going to see a very large addition being built. Our concern was the view shed from Hoyt Lake, and from what we've seen from renderings, you're only going to see maybe just a fraction of the building up above the 1904 building. Which
just on the north side,
absolutely,
the northwest side.
It's fantastic.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because obviously it's the biggest investment, private public investment that's been made in a cultural institution in our town, maybe in ever.
Yeah, it's huge.
So if you go to the lakeside of the museum, there's my least favorite part of the whole community, which is that mass of asphalt.
Yes.
That extends from almost the base of the steps all the way to the steps that go down to the lake.
Correct.
What's the plan for that? I keep trying to find out. I can't seem to find out.
Well, it's funny. We've just finished a 5-year planning update, which has been vetted through the public on what they want to see in the park system. And that area, because it is pretty complex when you've got Albright Knox, you've got the users, you've got the 198, and you've got the lake and the park, we're actually looking at that space as a potential mini master plan. There is a wide spans of asphalt there because it was for horse and buggy back in the day.
But that was gravel or perhaps even dirt at the time.
Yep, and it was just paved over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now you've got this crosswalk that seems to go from East Coast to West Coast.
Exactly.
And it's a little dangerous, but that area is also one of the most photographed in the entire city. You've got weddings, proms, graduations, everything that happens on those stairs. And what we have found too is the granite staircase that runs from Lincoln Parkway down to the lake is in terrible shape. It's one of the most historic remaining original elements to the park system. And we want to see that restored as part of our 5-year plan. And that will make a complete staircase, in essence, from the Albright Knox down to the lake. And as part of that, we have to start thinking about the amount of asphalt that's in between the two entities.
Well, if you drive through there, which I'm sure many of our listeners have, it's a free-for-all.
Absolutely.
People come from all directions. They wander out into the middle of the street. I don't know why or how more people have been killed there, because it's just, I mean, there's like no rules. It's
right.
Just swerve.
The Wild West.
Just swerve. If you're driving, you can glide across the lanes. It really doesn't matter how you approach it. It's perfectly all right. Swerve, no stop signs. Who cares? There are stop signs. Nobody observes them. And then they get mad at you if you observe them. And it's your turn to go, and they just plow in front of you, and they, you know, they give you the one-finger signal and nuts, which I get regularly. To go back in history again here. So I want our listeners to kind of visualize what was there, and I want to expand out just from Delaware Park. But is your the bridle path that went down Lincoln Parkway connected into the park? Well, now it's asphalt, and then you've got, boom, the 198.
Yes.
First of all, how did the 198 happen? A lot of people have no idea how that happened, and I know Robert Moses probably had his hand in this whole thing. But and now, of course, there's all kinds of people and movements to do this or that with it that goes back to well before the Masiello administration. So how do we get where we are today, and what do you think is going to happen?
Well, it was interesting. When I first came to Buffalo 5 years ago with the park system, when we went through this whole thing with the 198, I remember sitting in meetings and people were like, well, why would you build this park next to the highway? And it was humorous to me because I was like, no, this park has been here for like 150 years. The highway wasn't. So it started in the late 50s, in 59. And it's when Buffalo, they thought with the car, that we were going to see this mass explosion of population and we needed to plan for it. So they started inserting all of these quite large and point A to point B intersects through the city. And they basically obliterated what had been a park road that had connected, the site of Albright Knox, basically, with the zoo, essentially. And it was just a normal park road. And they decided they were going to bisect that from east to west, and they just put in an expressway. And they not only did they ruin the park road and the ambiance of that neighborhood and forest lawn in the park and divided the park in half, But they also ruined the water. As many know, Hoyt Lake sits stagnant. There is the flow of Skajakwata Creek that flows through Forest Lawn. It flows actually under that promenade at the Marcy Casino and then flows around the History Museum and connects back into the creek. But Mirror Lake is stagnant and Hoyt Lake is stagnant. And they're just filled, you know, with wells, and we've put a fountain in one to try to keep the water circulating. But they ruined the ecology of the area as well. You know, the before pictures are stunning as to how much water was there, and now we just have, you know, kind of festering water.
What do we do about it?
Well, hopefully we're going to fix it. We've developed a great relationship with Waterkeeper. They've got some great ideas in doing another lake study and how we can eventually, hopefully within the next decade or two, reconnect the creek and the lake. That would be ideal. When the 198 was built, they filled in a couple of wetland areas that actually, if you talk to Jill Jedlicka with Waterkeeper, wetlands are the kidneys that, you know, filter everything. And they filled in a couple with the 198. They filled in a beautiful rock garden in Delaware Park with rubble from the 198. So we want to see all that return. It would be wonderful to see those systems return. And the GBNRTC, which is a huge acronym for, I think, the greater... Oh, I can't even think of what it all is. But they are the group that has now been tasked with evaluating the impact of the 198 and what that road should eventually be in the future on behalf of the state.
Well, there's two sources of money for all this, essentially. There's the government and then there's the private citizens, people just out of the goodness of their heart. We've had... I guess essentially there's been a lot of decisions made governmentally that they sought public input, et cetera, but generally speaking, decisions made and it's validated or not validated, but it's still made in many cases. And I'm overgeneralizing, but oftentimes I think people feel quite powerless unless you've got lots and lots of money that you can actually individually make a difference. So if we're looking at what you're describing, I've seen a bunch of different numbers on it, depending on which way you decide to go. Where do you see, realistically, how do you mobilize the public to demand that kind of thing for the future of this community? Because if you look at what's going on in town, and what I ask all my guests at some point, which I'll ask you as well, how do we maintain this feeling, this momentum, kind of a new culture that we have here in Western New York about pride and I guess bringing back or adding to our community in such a way that, you know, we really are the world-class community many of us think we should be or could be.
I think that it's going to take a bit of advocacy on behalf of some of the nonprofit organizations that are environmentally focused or culturally focused. But really what we see, especially with like the 198, this is going to happen through a state agency, which, like you said, is government funded. And the state government has funding that they can put toward it, but there's also federal funding that can come into the area. Our biggest concern as an organization is, like you say, the sustainability of all of it. As we continue to build and improve, that's fabulous, and we should be continuing to build and improve, but we also have to sustain that level of investment. And so that's kind of our concern now is as we need that sustainability, and we need to plan in advance for that sustainability. We seem to plan for today, but we're not always planning for tomorrow.
This is typical of any institution, colleges, cities, towns. They get a great idea to build something, and then they forget that there's this thing called depreciation, which is financial for the most part, but very real physically. And there's a need to keep things up.
Sure.
And I've been part of institutions that have invested, you know, lots and lots and lots of money, and there's no funding thereafter. And so everybody looks at each other around the board table and says, well, what do we do now? We need an extra X number of million in our budget just to maintain this beautiful thing that we built. To the art gallery's credit, and also to Mr. Gundlach's credit, he would not complete his gift unless there was an endowment for its maintenance, which is huge. I don't believe the park has such an endowment, do they?
No, we do not.
And is there are there plans for endowments for the things that we're talking about here, or is it just do you have to go back to the well every single year and raise money?
Currently,
I mean, you have to do that.
Absolutely. Right. Currently, we do have to go back to the well and raise money every single year for what we're doing. We do not have an endowment. That is one of the things we've been looking at strategically, and we've just done a fundraising feasibility study. Seems like everybody's going into campaigns
right.
that you'll hear across the region.
Well, most of them come in here and talk about it.
So wonderful. You
can too.
But no, we're not ready to say or launch or do anything like that. We're still in the pre-planning phase, but we do believe that all of the investments that are being made, and it's not just by government, but as you mentioned, there are so many private individuals that are giving to our organization and mm-hmm. others that you want to see their investments sustained, that you want to see the things that we put into the ground last. And so we are looking at how we can put together an endowment campaign and what that campaign and an amount should be that's realistic, that's not overshooting anything, but that's also not undershooting, so that we can keep the parks looking great for everyone's kids, grandkids, and thereon.
We come back from the break, and I want to go from the ground up, how you take care of the day-to-day.
Sure.
And then how that weaves back into this endowment thing and your fundraising efforts. And not that we want to make a public appeal here today, but just to give people an idea that parks are not just, they just don't happen. You've got to have a bunch of people doing a lot of good things. So we'll be right back after more from our upstairs after these important messages.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. Mortgage rates have recently dropped, and now is an ideal time to purchase a home and lock in a low rate. If you're already a homeowner, let's discuss your current mortgage. There may never be a better time to reduce your rate or access the equity in your home by refinancing with Hunt Mortgage. Call Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 for a free, no obligation consultation.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. It's the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and Boston, Massachusetts through our links. And you'll also find access to a complete set of home ownership services at HuntRealEstate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and for more information about our exclusive program that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to effectively buy the before but live the after, call 633-3700 and ask for details. And in our world here, Western New York, really all across upstate, we've got a great architectural collection, but other people would call them old houses. And old houses sometimes need to be fixed up. And you're sold on the charm, and then all of a sudden you get into it and you find out that it's going to cost a lot more money than you thought. There's no better way to find out what it's going to cost and then be able to finance it, particularly at today's rates, than through the Buy the Before and Live the After program. So call and ask for details today, 633-3700, and ask about our pre-purchase commitment, what I mentioned earlier in the show, which allows you to enter the market effectively with cash, and even our warm home loan that will make your home a better place to live. That's 633-3700, and if you just have a general question about real estate, call the Hunt Customer Service Center, 633-9400, the only one of its kind in North America. One of our customer service reps will either answer your question right there or direct you to the appropriate professional for whatever it is you may need. Whether you're considering buying or selling a home, financing home, insuring your home, or even fixing up the one you have, and remember, our guarantee stands, we will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan. There's no stronger guarantee in the market today. Call today, 633-9400. Excuse me, I'm in the studio today with Stephanie Crockett. Mrs. Crockett is the executive director of the Buffalo Olmsted Conservancy, Parks Conservancy. We've been talking a little bit about the heritage of the of our community that's so deeply tied to the park system and some of the not-so-good things that have happened in the meantime, like a highway that cut Delaware Park in half, it's a little thing, and then trashed the watershed there. Jill Jadlicka has been on the show to discuss those horrors and what they're planning to do about it. But we have what we have. And as I mentioned before the break, there's the issue of just we can have all these beautiful dreams about the future, but we've got a system right now. As you say, you're maintaining 850 acres. I know what it takes to maintain 1 acre, much less 850. So what is – how do you handle it? What's your staff like? How much do volunteers play into it? How do you keep it rolling?
Well, we have about 34 full-time staff, and that is both administrative and full-time labor force assigned to the different park districts. We have 4 districts that we manage. And then we have – probably, I want to say 85 to 100 individuals that we hire seasonally. They come in from about April 1st to about November 1st and are really just focused on either the parks themselves or even some of our, we manage the golf courses for all 3 that are there for the city.
By manage, you mean maintain?
We maintain and then we rent them out. We do the retail operation as well.
Do you have a greenskeepers?
Yep. Wow. We have 2 different greenskeepers, one that handles Delaware Park and one that handles both CAS and South Park. Mm-hmm. And then we depend on about 2,000 volunteers a year at different times throughout the year. A lot of companies will do kind of employee team building out in the park, and we work with them on specific projects that help us continue to maintain the parks. It's a real community effort when you consider our small staff and the amount of folks that pitch in.
When you see something, just to divert for a second, when you see something like this massive investment that's taking place on the waterfront at another park,
sure.
How do you feel about that when you see that?
Well, I know that, first of all, I think LaSalle Park and now Ralph C. Wilson Jr. Centennial Park, that park needed a lot of help.
It sure did.
And
does. Still
yeah.
does. Yeah.
And so the investment going there, I think, is actually quite smart in that you look at Canal Side and you look at everything else that's happening on the water, and there again, the theme of connectivity, I think you're going to continue to see how that's going to just bring the whole waterfront together. Mm-hmm. What we hope is that through that park's redevelopment, because they're really looking at completely almost like gutting it and redoing
it. It's a huge plan.
Which is something we could never do in the Olmsted parks because they're historic and they're on the National Register. So you can't just come in and blow up an Olmsted park and redo it. So having it there at LaSalle is smart. And then we hope that there will be more of an effort to even connect that park
to Front
up,
Park.
Absolutely, to Front, to the rest of the parks, heading all the way up to Niagara Falls.
Sure. So are you engaged with them in conversation so you're not outside looking in, watching the television reports and saying, what?
No. Actually, our director of planning and advocacy, Brian Dold, he's been sitting in on many of those meetings. And it's been, again, a very inclusive process. Because we are in a public-private partnership with the City of Buffalo, they pay for probably about 65% of our operational labor just for the park operations. We've had great conversations, and it's very exciting when you consider that many people are gravitating toward Michael Van Valkenburg. I know he's doing the landscape plan for Albright Knox. Here he's working on the Ralph C. Wilson Jr. Centennial Park. I've even heard that he has offered to come in and help the Botanical Gardens with their expansion. So we're starting to see a lot of MVV in town, and that's also very exciting because he has a lot of vision and principles that embody Olmsted as well. So
he has the historical perspective.
He has, and he has the vision to understand that what's being built or designed is going to have lasting future impact. It's not just a let's build it for today and then forget about it. He's trying to have some forward vision.
So we have a bunch of efforts, obviously, going on here now. The art gallery, LaSalle Park, the ongoing efforts that you have, the 198, the future of that. And as we've talked about on this show before, there's other kind of private ventures, for example, to redo the golf courses that are right in the middle.
Sure.
One's right in the middle of your park. The proposal is about the Arboretum to actually restore the, or actually create the Arboretum, because it really was never completed, correct?
Nope.
Olmsted's original plan in South
correct.
Park. So where do you think, I guess, how important is that Arboretum? I know Dave Colligan and a lot of other people are deeply invested in this whole thing, and there's been studies done about how that can happen, but a lot of studies, they get done and then everybody looks at each other and say, what do we do now?
Right. So with South Park and the Arboretum, that is a wonderful example of where our five-year plan and polling the community and asking for their priorities as well was significant for us, because they identified in that community that actually South Park Lake is the number one project of interest. The lake in South Park is slowly eutrophying. It's filling in with sediment and vegetation.
I've seen aerial photos. It's not pretty.
No, and it used to be fabulous. Mm-hmm. And so we're actually working to have a study done on what we would need to do to restore that lake. The second priority that the public identified was to bring back the Arboretum, and that's what the study that we did back in 2014 and 15, oh, I'm sorry, that was the golf course study, 17 and 18 when we did the Arboretum study, we could see the Arboretum come back to life with an original six phases of work, and if the golf course was ever removed, we could finish phases 7 through 11 and bring back what Olmsted had envisioned as this absolutely magnificent collection of tree specimen.
How do you generate enough public interest to get there? Because, I mean, a lot of people just look at that and see it as almost just like with the Nicholas Project, as being almost unfathomable. You know, where do we start? It's so much money.
Right. It is a lot of money, but it's also, I think, if everyone could consider the value of trees, not just specimen trees, but trees in general, and what they're doing right now when you consider climate change and everything else, when we talk about how we're going to be lowering, you know, carbon footprint and everybody's responsibility, trees are actually a management tool. The leaves absorb carbon. We do ourselves a more of a disservice to remove them. So to bring back an arboretum, which would be a wonderful tourist attraction from just the fauna as well and the flora, but when you have these trees that are being brought in, which we think would be about 2,100 varieties, the impact to the environment is huge. And we need to be doing more of this. You know, we had the October storm of 2006, which wiped out about, I think, 11,000 trees were calculated. And we've brought back, thanks to our efforts and relief efforts, about 9,000.
Wow.
But there's so many more that could be planted. You know, MLK Junior Park, we planted about 300 trees a couple of years ago, but that needs many, many more to bring it back to the way it was.
I spent some time in Berlin a couple of years ago, and Berlin, of course, is a tremendous historic site for lots of reasons. They have some incredible parks in that city right now that were completely obliterated in World War II. Obliterated. They didn't exist, including the zoo, which was shocking. Animals running around. I mean, it's a horror story.
Right.
I mean, beyond a horror story, it's almost hard to read when you read about this stuff. Yet they've done an amazing job, and some of that was United States money through the Marshall Plan to recreate many cities in Europe, but it was a massive worldwide undertaking to recreate not just Berlin and their park system, but many cities in Europe that are now tourist sites and people flocking there. And in the if you read the history, the pre-World War II history, it's amazing how often they reference that on a decent day, how the parks just get flooded with people because urban parks, Do we have a similar experience, or are people so tied up in their computers and cell phones and that kind of thing that we're losing touch with that? Is that a reason why it may be difficult to raise money?
That's a good question. I know that an author named Richard Louvre did a book called Last Child in the Woods, which he identified as nature deficit disorder, and that children aren't identifying with nature as much as they used to. But I do think that there's some of those issues out there as far as people not connecting. But you also see young people coming forward, millennials coming forward. My daughter says, "Don't call me a millennial; I'm a Gen Zer."
Mm-hmm.
They are coming back in full force, wanting to know more about their life and the environment, and where we might see that resurgence and interest in keeping parks healthy and safe and accessible for all is actually through the next couple of generations.
I believe it's essential. I hate to think about going back to anything, but I think we have to go forward based on the assets we have. And we'll be right back with more from our Steers after these important messages.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. Mortgage rates have recently dropped, and now is an ideal time to purchase a home and lock in a low rate. If you're already a homeowner, let's discuss your current mortgage. There may never be a better time to reduce your rate or access the equity in your home by refinancing with Hunt Mortgage. Call Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 for a free, no obligation consultation.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Hunt Mortgage is the home of the pre-purchase commitment and the buy the before and live the after programs. Call today, 633-3700, and you'll get that guarantee of ours, lowest rate and closing costs. And in today's world, where rates are already so low, you want to make sure that you're right on the cutting edge of that, only through Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. I'm in the studio today with Stephanie Crockett, who is the executive director of the Buffalo Olmsted Parks Conservancy, and we've been talking about a wide range of topics. Now we got into some very deep philosophic topics before the break in terms of how people behave and how important the parks are to them, and the intrusion of technology and what that might do to mitigate people's interest in the public parks. We do have a caller on the line. This is Gustav from Williamsville. Gustav, how can we help you?
Thank you. Any part of the funding for this, instead of only taxpayer money, is either user fees such as parking fees for the parks, is that part of the solution to viability here?
Interesting question. Right now it's free, right?
Yeah, these are public parks, so they are free access to everyone.
Except the golf course, $12
yes,
or something.
Yes, the golf course. And the golf course, we have a philosophy that we're going to try to keep it as low as possible, even below Erie County levels if possible. So, no, there's no real opportunity to capture user fees. Really, there's no way to even capture user data. We don't even really know who's using the parks,
really?
Because there's no gate. There's mm-hmm. no way to capture. Where there's also no parking fees. People can park in the parks. There's really no capture for us as a revenue source.
So we have weather out there too, which we're going to have some interesting weather today. What do you do when? I mean, to a large extent, one would think that for many months people don't use the parks, but I walk by all the time and they're in use.
Yes, they are.
In spite of things. So how do we make them, or is it just nature that takes care of this, a year-round asset? Because you go to other cities where it's warmer climate and people are outside more just because.
Right. But. No, there's the parks are active in Buffalo year-round. We've got people that will come out snowshoeing, cross-country skiing. I'm amazed at the number of joggers that are going around either the Ring Road in South Park or the Ring Road in Delaware Park. The parks are always very active, and we have to do our best to keep roads somewhat clear. The city helps us in that, but you know, just making sure that there are trails that are clear. It's a maintenance feat, quite actually, and we have to do it in a very prescribed way because we only have so many resources. So obviously, safety and hazards become the number one thing. Trash becomes a number one thing. There's a lot of number one things. But then you get into the actual rehabilitation, the planting of flowers, the weeding, the all of that. But the first things first are just, like you say, keeping a park clean, pristine, safe, healthy is our number one.
Do you organize activities too? I know you've got events, fundraising events, that kind of thing. But is there like on the waterfront, the Harbor Development Corporation has all kinds of, I mean, they say they've got 500 and some activities over the course of the summer,
right.
Planned activities. Do we do that in the Olmsted Parks?
So the Olmsted Parks, we are more of a vessel for other people to do events. Mm-hmm. The Conservancy itself only does two fundraisers a year. We do one at the beginning of the year and one at the end of the year, but that's it for our fundraising. But many people, we have races. I know that the corporate challenge is a huge thing, and when you talk about weather and the impacts that can happen with massive events.
Mm-hmm.
But those events that happen aren't controlled by the Conservancy. We technically...
Do you give them permits, or how do you...
They get a permit through the city. Mm-hmm. The city and their special events team reviews all the different permits and their insurances and everything, but we really can't prohibit necessarily an event from coming in if they meet all the requirements that the city has. The only downside is we have to clean up after it.
Hmm. Interesting. We have a caller online. This is John from Rochester. John, how can we help you?
Hey, Peter. Hey, Stephanie. Stephanie, I love what you're talking about, preservation of the parks, but I've got a couple comments. The 198, I do a lot of business in the Buffalo area, and I love the 198. It's so convenient. I think it would be a mistake to decrease the velocity of traffic there and make it more less of a transportation corridor. My second point is on the trees. I agree with you. Trees are great for the atmosphere, and they pull out carbon dioxide, which actually carbon dioxide to a certain level is a benefit because of carbon dioxide, the green plant life, including trees, produces oxygen for the earth. So I think I applaud you on your stances, and the 198, let's get more comments on that.
Well, are you in favor of increasing the carbon footprint then? Just out of curiosity, because I'm just kidding.
Carbon dioxide is used by plant life to produce oxygen. In fact,
so do you fly a private jet, John? Or?
When the Earth evolved,
just kidding.
There was just methane and carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Green plant life transformed it into oxygen. Is because of that, we're here.
Right.
Oxygen was produced from carbon dioxide. So carbon dioxide is a need to a certain level. The question is how much.
Interesting. How would you respond to that? All that?
Well, no, I think we're on the same page with regard to the trees that are being essential. It's a give-take on the tree situation because they are – it's a carbon dioxide-oxygen exchange, which is exactly what we need for life.
Mm-hmm. But to John's point about the 198 becoming kind of a part of our transportation, obviously it's a key.
Right. I think there's been so much discussion about this, and I get worried that people think that we're trying to say that there should be no road.
Right.
There should be a road. There was always a road. There was always a park road that ran essentially from the Elmwood area over to, well, actually, the parkway looked like Chapin that right. went from Parkside all the way to the Science Museum at Best Street.
Well,
you know,
let's face this.
Talk about losing trees and oxygen and all that.
And the 33 has wrecked the east side.
Yes, it has.
It's wrecked
the east
side.
Basically poisoned it. Yes.
Air quality.
Absolutely.
Nothing else. I mean,
absolutely.
It's a terrible thing.
So when you talk about the 198, yes, I know that there are people, and this is a change thing, too. People don't want to change.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't need to be going 50 miles an hour down the 198. I'm not quite sure we need to be going 30 either. But we need to find that right corridor method for the future. And we used to have a park road. It wasn't a highway. That park road was servicing the exact same population that we have today. We just
probably a larger population, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Actually,
it was about 285,000, I think. And mm-hmm. I think we're about 265 or something like that.
Okay.
So, but what we have now is single people in cars, where we used to have people on bikes and walking and on horseback and whatever. And I understand times change. We're not going to revert back a century, but
Also, we had no suburbs like we have today.
Absolutely.
Too. So people are connecting back out to their homes.
Yep. But we've introduced a safety aspect. And when you've got children playing soccer 30 feet from a road, we do not need to be driving 50 miles an hour down that road. It is not that important. And it's just more important for quality of life. And we have had huge changes, and we could see some of those changes mitigated. And that's what the Conservancy is all about, is how do we bring back that quality of life through our historic park system? Because as you'll see, in the real estate world, I don't find many houses for sale that are on the perimeter of the parks. People tend to hang on to them.
Well, they do, and if they do sell them, they tend to move quickly. You have a five-year plan, and before we end the show, talk a little bit about that, 2020 to 2024, priorities for Buffalo's Olmsted Park System.
So we have a published plan. It's on our website as well, which is bfloparks.org. It is in an electronic flip format, so you could read the whole thing if you wanted. But it takes us a little bit on a history tour, but then on a perspective for the future. We've got a master plan that, you know, forecasts out about $428 million worth of projects, but we know we can't do that all at once. So we're eating our elephant one bite at a time, and we're doing it in five-year chunks. And so this five-year plan addresses top priorities that were voiced by the community through a whole year of input. And we've identified priority projects. Now, we haven't identified what the priorities are of the priorities. Mm-hmm. That probably will be dictated by funding and public interest. But we have identified the projects that we're going to remain focused on for the next 5 years. So when people come to us with a new idea, we can say, that's great. Let's consider it that the next 5 years, we're focused on this.
Here's my opinion.
Sure. Okay.
I look at real estate values all the time.
Sure.
And in my mind, the lowest cost, highest return investment is landscape. In other words, if I want to improve my property, I want it to make more saleable, the lowest cost, and frankly, the one I can put the most sweat equity in easiest is landscape, and it makes a huge difference.
With curb appeal.
So this is our landscape. This is our front yard, so to speak. And as we look at things like the Buffalo Billion, which is passed now, and there was talk of a second billion, but I don't know whatever happened about that. It was mainly geared towards economic development. Can you make an argument for economic development for the parks? And were you at the table when this money was being doled out?
Not the first set. The second set, the Buffalo Billion II, I believe, has been allocated. We did receive a small portion. We've received about $4 million for improvements to MLK Junior Park. And in our five-year plan, almost all of those projects will be completed thanks to that $4 million worth of funding. So, yes, we see that economic development is a huge benefit for having complete, healthy, safe parks. Like I said, it's a quality of life measure. And as you bring people in from an economic standpoint to be creating our new urban city, replenishing our new urban city, dealing with this renaissance, our green space is so valuable. You're not going to find it anywhere else.
You have 34 employees. Who are the lobbyists?
We don't have any.
Well, you must be it then. Well, good luck. Because this is the thing. I think industry, our unions are much better at in terms of getting allocations of funds that are publicly available. And I'm not faulting them. I just think they're better at it.
Oh, sure.
And as a result, the public assets tend to fall down on a list someplace, somewhere below one or two or three. But hopefully, as future budgets are considered, the Olmsted Parks will be part of that allocation, and that $428 million can become a reality. In our last minute or so, how could our listeners participate? How could they help you? How could they volunteer?
Well, they can do anything through our website. So you'll learn about donations, volunteering, our projects, all on our website, which again is bfloparks.org. And if you work for a company that wants to get involved in the parks, we have wonderful corporate volunteer opportunities to get your hands in the dirt. And then we have our like I said, our two fundraising events of the year. We have a spring into summer luncheon in May, and we have our gala in the fall. And we're looking at Delaware Park this year for our gala.
Stephanie Crockett, Executive Director of the Buffalo Olmsted Parks Conservancy. Thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you so much, Peter.
I'll be back again next week at the same time. And by the way, this afternoon I'm actually going to be in an open house in Orchard Park, 21 Edsford Court. So come and join me if you'd like. This is Peter Hunt. We'll be back again next week at the same time. Remember, when it comes to real estate, all upstate is Hunt Country.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.